This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
To the left-hand side for Vieira. He'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Good morning, everybody. How's it going? I hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Welcome back to another live episode of the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, of course, part of the 90 Min Football family. I'm your host, Harry Simeon. And on this edition, we're going to look back on a really, really disappointing night at the Allianz Arena. Arsenal eliminated from the UEFA Champions League at the quarterfinal stage, having lost the second leg to Bayern Munich by a goal to nil. And predictably, there's been a meltdown online. There's been lots of overreaction, in my opinion. Look, it's very difficult because there's a fine line between overreaction and then just major disappointment. This is a major disappointment, but it shouldn't lead to a massive overreaction. I say this a lot when I talk about this Arsenal team, and I've said this a lot over the last, year and a bit, that this team, it's great in patches and it's on its way to being one of the very best, but it's not quite there yet. And whenever I've said that along the way, whenever I've said we're not the favourites to win the league, or I still think Manchester City are going to win the league, or I think that Liverpool might finish above us, all things that I've said over the course of this season, normally I get a pile-on. What's the matter with you? Loser mentality, negativity, blah, blah, blah. No, it's because I know this team inside out. It's because I watch this team, I cover this team, and I study this team week in, week out. And I'm yet to be convinced that this is a side that is ready to win the UEFA Champions League. The Premier League is a different beast as well, because, of course, in the Premier League, we are facing probably one of the greatest club sides ever in Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, reigning treble winners. I know they went out of the competition last night, and I have to say, when the Arsenal game finished and I sort of calmed down after a few minutes, I flicked over to the extra time of that, watched it go to penalties, watched Real Madrid eliminate them. And there was a tiny bit of me that felt like, yes, this is good. Like, it's not all about us now tonight, because Manchester City, the mighty Manchester City that everybody was backing to swat Real Madrid away like a fly at the Etihad, given their record there, they've gone out too. But then it dawned on me that what that actually means is that Manchester City have two less games now to play in the running, which probably increases and enhances their chances of winning the Premier League. Look, Manchester City had to take off players last night because they were running on empty. Manchester City ended the game with a number of key players that they'd have probably liked in ideal circumstances to have on the pitch, sitting on the substitutes bench, which says to me that there's probably a wider issue about player welfare that we need to be discussing. But that's not an excuse for what happened last night. I'm just saying that when you're talking about top level players being gassed out in the quarterfinals of a UEFA Champions League, the point in the season where you want them to be at their best, where you want them to be at their peak, where everybody wants to see the best football, you probably have to look at the calendar. You probably have to look at the bigger and wider picture. As for Arsenal last night, we're just not ready. We're not ready for a number of reasons, and we'll explain those reasons and we'll talk through those reasons throughout the duration of this podcast. A big hello to everybody that's joining us, by the way. Special shout out to my good friend, Alfie Reynolds. If you're a rugby fan, make sure that you're subscribed to Alfie's channel. Brilliant, brilliant content. He says, mate, strange one. And Alfie was reporting on the Arsenal game against Aston Villa the other day for TalkSport. He said, I felt Arsenal was set up well, like they were against Villa, but once again, didn't take their chances. Is it naivety, a lack of quality, or is it something else? And that's a really, really good question to get kind of started on here. Do I think it's naivety? I think in the past, we've been naive. I think if you go back to the Porto tie, there were points where we were naive, where Porto, being more streetwise than us, gave them a bit of an advantage and a bit of a grip in the game. And it allowed them to disrupt the flow and the tempo, which in turn impacted our performance. Is it a lack of quality? I don't think it is a lack of quality, because I think that you've seen over most of this season and most of last season, if you go back to kind of the beginning of last season and you take it all the way up to now, Arsenal have been an incredibly consistent team. The problem is just that Manchester City have been more consistent. But is it a lack of quality? I don't think it's a lack of quality. What I think is the major issue at this moment in time, the biggest issue, not the only issue, though, I will say that, is fatigue. And people are going to say that's an excuse. No, it's not an excuse. It's an observation. It's what I see when I watch this team currently. I watched the Aston Villa game back on Monday morning. And one of the things I kind of picked up on was that, and it was obvious, I think everybody picked up on it really, when the second half started, it looked like somebody had turned the lights out on a lot of these players and in terms of their energy levels. There was just a deflation in terms of energy levels. It was as if somebody had burst the bubble, popped the balloon, however you want to put it, and Arsenal just had nothing left in the tank. I think you saw that again last night. I thought you saw a really well-organized, solid performance away to Bayern Munich last night in the first 45 minutes, where we were very, very rarely in any danger. We had some bright moments in attack without them really developing into, you know, dangerous attempts at goal or anything like that. But, you know, some of the spaces and areas we got into, just the final pass, final touch wasn't quite there. And then in the second half, despite being a little bit toothless, I think that's a fair way of describing it, I never really felt like Bayern were going to score, apart from when they created that one opportunity from which Joshua Kimmich arrived in the penalty area and smashed the header home. My bigger disappointment, even bigger than the fact that we conceded the goal and we switched off defensively in that moment, is that we didn't give it a real go. Like, there was just, you know, you're chasing a game, you need a goal. There was none of that route one stuff. And I'm not saying I like that stuff normally. But, you know, you pump the ball forward and you want to push your centre halves in the latter stages. You want to get them up there. You want to get Gabriel, especially Big Gabby, in the mix. You want Arsenal to be a little bit more direct. And it felt like we just didn't have a clue how to try and attack and how to make things happen. Palace says they hit the post about three or four times. Come on, man. Like, the one that hit the bar, yeah, fine. The header, I think it was from Goretzka. Everything else outside of the post, is that like, if the goalkeeper's got it covered? Not for me. That's not something that I'm going to sort of hang on to. I think there's a lot of issues. I think there's a lot of reasons why Arsenal crashed out of the UEFA Champions League. But for me, in answer to Alfie's question, the biggest one is just that we've run out of gas. And I don't know how you fix that now at this stage in the season, unless you massively rotate, but then you risk dropping the level of the team. And this is an issue for us. The quick turnaround in between every single game is really demanding and really taxing, and we just don't seem to be able to cope with that. Now, can you go back down along the line and lay that blame at the manager's feet and say, well, he should have managed the squad better over the course of the season. Because I think one of the things that a lot of people say about Mikel Arteta, and rightly so, is that he doesn't really like to rotate much, is that he quite likes to play with the same 11, is that he quite likes to have consistency in his team selection. He will make changes from time to time. The Trossard for Martinelli change is a good example of one that he quite likes doing. Sometimes it'll be Jorginho in midfield, sometimes it won't. Sometimes it'll be a different left back. But outside of that, it's all pretty consistent. The starting 11 was fine. I don't have an issue with the starting 11. I wanted to see one of Jorginho or Partey in there alongside Declan Rice. We went with Jorginho, who I actually thought was probably one of Arsenal's better players on the night until he came off. Tomiyasu at left back was what we all wanted to see. I did want to see, personally, Kai Havertz up front, although he was completely starved of service. And the only other thing that I was kind of maybe open to was the inclusion of Gabriel Jesus, because, of course, he's got this incredible record in the UEFA Champions League. But I came away from the Villa game saying that Gabriel Jesus looked like he was on his knees in terms of his fitness levels. And, you know, therefore, can you trust him in a game like this? As I say, the first half performance for me was pretty good. I thought it was really good. I thought it was organised, and I thought it was just lacking that final punch at the end of it. Second half performance, though, as I say, it was like the lights went out. It was really, really poor. Meanie Genie says, Bayern's XG was 3.69. Arsenal's was 1.95. Can you for once not lie and accept you were outclassed? I didn't say that we deserved to win the game. I said the first half performance was pretty good in a lot of areas. And I've said that the second half was pretty poor. Not said, I don't believe the words of Arsenal deserve to win the game have come out of my mouth. So let's not pretend that I said something I didn't. And yeah, you saved me doing the statistics part anyway. So cheers for that. Look, people will point to the lack of creativity that we saw last night. Is it a lack of creativity in that we don't have the players to be able to create opportunities? Or is it a case of three or four of the primary sort of creative influences that we have are all suffering from a dip in form? I think it's probably the latter. Martin Odegaard looked half fit to me last night. I know that he... had an injury problem and he was touch and go for this game. And I know that he's the captain and I know that there would have been a desire both on the manager's part to get him on the pitch, but also on his part to play on such an occasion. Didn't look fit, nowhere near it. Some of his touches were heavy. Some of his touches were a little bit off. I didn't feel he had that sharpness that he normally does to make sure that he can get in front of his man first and foremost. And sort of, you know, when he's receiving the ball on the turn, protect it well enough, because he just was a little bit slow to react at times. And I think that was partly because, or mainly, I should say, because he wasn't quite fit. Bukayo Saka was a non-entity last night, and not for the first time in recent weeks. You know, it's just... I want him to be a bit more aggressive. I want him to be a bit more forward thinking. I want him to, and I'm going to say this, I want him to stop calling for fouls all the time, every time there's some contact, and just get your head down and go. Really have a go at it, you know, really try and take someone on, try and get to the byline, try and cut it back, try and make things happen, try and force the issue. It felt like nobody at any point last night really wanted to kind of take the responsibility or take on the mantle. And that's what the very, very best players in this game do. I think that Declan Rice looked really, really tired as well. He couldn't get across the pitch well enough. There were some sloppy touches, some sloppy passes. There was him being caught on his heels a few times, I thought, when passes came into him. And as a result, he had to stretch to try and maintain possession and things like that. Just not quite at the level that we've become accustomed to over the course of this season. People will say, and the obvious thing to say is, Arsenal need a striker. And I agree. Like, I agree that in the bigger picture and in the grand scheme of things, Arsenal need to go out there and they need to go get a top striker. Because in the event that your wide players, your midfielders are struggling to get goals, someone who has such a high rate of sort of productivity in front of goal is probably going to be able to come up and deliver you the goods. But we can't be sitting here or have been sitting here 6 weeks ago talking about how brilliant the attack is and how it's all clicked and how it's all working. And then a month down the line saying, oh my God, we're a disaster in attack. We're not. We're not on the whole. What's happened is that a number of players have stopped producing. I mean, take Gabriel Martinelli, for example, right? Gabriel Martinelli is a really good example of this. I love the player. I think he's fantastic. I think he brings so much to the team. And do you know what? I thought in the first half, he was one of the few Arsenal players that showed aggression and showed, you know, that kind of front-footedness and the want to take on his man, to beat his man and to try and force the issue. He got 15 league goals last season, Gabriel Martinelli. With 29 games into the Premier League this season and he's got six. He's not been able to maintain that level. Bukayo Saka's performances this season, I don't think have been as good, but he's closer to the numbers that he was kind of turning in last season. If I just bring Bukayo Saka's numbers up nice and quickly, I could tell you exactly how many Premier League goals he's got. 14. So he's only one shy of what he managed last season. And he's still got eight games to go. So, you know, he's done his bit, although I think he's been a little bit under the level that we've become accustomed to in recent weeks. He's still done his bit in terms of contributing. Another one would be Martin Ødegaard. You know, and I'm not talking about this in the context of the Champions League. I'm talking about this in the context of our season. Martin Ødegaard last season, 15 league goals. He's got seven and there's six games to go, less than that. He's made 29 appearances and he's got seven goals. That's nowhere near the return of what we got from Martin Ødegaard and from Gabriel Martinelli last season. Add Kai Havertz into the equation. He's contributed, I think, about 10, which is, you know, a few more than Granit Xhaka managed last season. And I know Havertz is a more attack-minded player and has played at centre-forward a lot more in recent times than he has in midfield, where he spent a lot of the season. But the point I'm trying to make here, guys, is that the goals have dried up because not everybody is pulling their weight. And without that clinical striker, when that happens, it's really problematic and noticeable. I would argue that bringing that striker in will take this team to the next level. And I would argue that it's definitely the next step in this team's development and in this team's growth. But I honestly believe that the lack of creativity that we've seen in the second half against Aston Villa and across the entire 90, if we're being honest, in Munich last night, is a result and is a consequence of just a group of players all dropping off in terms of their own individual levels all at the same time. And that, for me, I'll circle back to what I said initially, comes down to fatigue. I talked about Martin Ødegaard, not sharp enough, not quick enough, not at the level that we've become accustomed to. Bukayo Saka, I've seen lots of you in the chat saying it's because he's tired. You know, then you go further back in the team. Rice isn't dominating the way that Rice was dominating. He isn't patrolling midfields and completely controlling them in the way that he did earlier in the season. It's unrealistic to expect someone, by the way, to maintain that level week in, week out when you've played as many minutes as he has. And again, I'll go back to the point of, do we need to look at the way that these players have been managed over the course of the season? And is that the reason why we're in this position now where we've got six league games to go? And I don't know about you, we're going to do a Wolves preview, of course, before that game. But I'm not confident about that game. I'm not looking forward to that game. I think that that's going to be an incredibly difficult fixture. And if I'm sitting here saying that the team has gassed out and run out of legs and, you know, just is running on empty at this moment in time, how can you fix that in the short space of time that we have with regards to the turnaround? It's going to be so difficult. So difficult. Partey. I want to talk about Partey. Where is he? What's wrong with him? I looked at that game last night, and when I thought that Jorginho was starting to tire a little bit, and he was starting to give away free kicks because he was getting caught out in certain positions. I was screaming at the television, bring on Thomas Partey. Bring on Thomas Partey. We've been waiting an age for this guy to come back to fitness. Here he is sitting on the substitutes bench. And what? Mikel Arteta doesn't even believe that he's got half an hour in the tank? Then what's the point? What's the point in having him? Thomas Partey isn't at his peak condition. We know that. But Thomas Partey gives you both sides of the game. He gives you that physical dominance and he gives you the ability to progress the ball through the lines from deep. He's almost like a better version of Jorginho, right? That's what Thomas Partey is. Jorginho is intelligent. He's smart, but he is at a point in his career where he's getting to that area, I beg your pardon, where, he's probably not going to be able to do that every 3 days and for 90 minutes. And Arteta recognises that and he takes him off and he does make that change. Declan Rice is running on empty. Why the reluctance to bring on Thomas Partey? Thomas Partey is not a downgrade on Declan Rice. I'm sorry. Like, he might not be as fit as him. He might not be as robust as him. We know that he's had his fair share of injury problems. But nobody's going to convince me that Thomas Partey is a downgrade on Declan Rice. That's as good a Declan Rice replacement as you could find, with the exception of maybe Rodri in the league. Thomas Partey needs to be involved. And I cannot for the life of me work out what is going on there at the moment. Has he lost faith in him? Has he lost trust in him? Perhaps. But we need this guy because we don't have a better option. We need this guy because we are running on empty in a really important part of the midfield and in a really important part of the team. And we're not using the guy. Why? Somebody explain why. We obviously conceded the goal. Joshua Kimmich powering home the header on 63 minutes. I look back at that goal and I think, could David Raya have done more with the initial cross into the penalty area? And actually, my answer is no. I don't think David Raya could have done more. I think David Raya gets a good contact on the ball and he pushes the ball into a wide area, which is what you're coached to do, which is what you're supposed to do. And then it's on the fullback to get out to the crosser nice and quickly. Ben White, could he get out there quicker? Probably. If he does it guarantee that he stops the cross? No, but he could get out there quicker, in my opinion. And then the ball comes into the box and it's Martinelli who switches off and allows Joshua Kimmich to run into the penalty area unchallenged, get himself across Takehiro Tomiyasu and power home the header. I heard somebody last night saying that David Raya was at fault for that goal. Absolute load of nonsense. Can't believe that's even a discussion. He does well with the cross, in my opinion, as well as he can do with a cross that he can't reach. And then the header, I mean, you could have put five people in goal and they wouldn't have saved that. Such was the power on it and the placement from Joshua Kimmich. Is a really good finish, a really, really good take of the opportunity. But after that goal, did you ever feel like Arsenal were going to be able to turn it back around? Did you ever feel like Arsenal had enough energy at that point, enough momentum to be able to fight back? No, you didn't. And so 5 minutes later, Mikel Arteta made two changes. He took off Jorginho and he took off Martinelli and he brought on Gabriel Jesus and Leandro Trossard. Two players, by the way, that came on in the first leg and made a difference. So in theory, the right substitution. The problem for me, and this is something that I've noticed Mikel Arteta does time and time again, is that he abandons playing with a midfield when we go in search of a goal. And Arsene Wenger used to do this at times, and it used to frustrate the living daylights out of me. You need a goal, yes. Theoretically, you want as many attack-minded players on the pitch as you can possibly have. But it's as if people forget that without a midfield, without the ability to A, recover possession, and B, build from the midfield onwards, you don't create chances. All that happens is you end up with six attackers on the pitch chasing shadows because they can't get the ball off the other team that does have a midfield and has a spare man all the time because you're not plugging in the right holes and the right spaces. You go back to how compact that game was in the first half, how difficult it was for any midfielder on both sides to be able to receive the ball and turn. It was really tough. Yet the minute we took off our midfield, and I'd say the game was starting to open up anyway as it went along when I think both sides were starting to get tired a little bit. But you look at how that game finished. There was no control from Arsenal whatsoever. There was no creativity from the middle third. And all we ended up doing was chasing shadows. And we couldn't get our foot on the ball and we couldn't start building a rhythm and we couldn't start dictating the play. And therefore, in my view, we never had any chance whatsoever of finding that equalizing goal. From the minute we conceded last night, and probably the most damning indictment of the second half performance last night, is that at no point did I ever even believe that an equalizer was possible. And I'm Mr. Glass Half Full. I'm Arteta's lawyer, as you guys like to call me. I just couldn't see it. And that's because I think key players were not at it. Key players' fitness levels had completely deserted them. There was no structure to the team anymore. It was all a little bit desperate. And we were up against a side that were far more experienced, far more streetwise, had far more know-how, and were far better equipped to close out the game. Will we learn from this? Yeah, I think we will. I'm not under any illusions. Like, I don't think it's easy to win the Champions League. I didn't expect Arsenal to return to the competition for the first time in a number of years and just go on and win it. I didn't expect that. My frustration is that this is not the best Bayern Munich team. It's not a crap Bayern Munich team. I don't think there are ever crap Bayern Munich teams and cup pedigree and all of that stuff. You know, it does play a part in these types of competitions. Look at Real Madrid. Real Madrid, the prime example of what having know-how, experience, and a certain aura in a competition can do. So I'm disappointed and I'm frustrated because of the fact that, you know, this wasn't the best Bayern side, yet we've not been able to get past them. But at the same time, I'm not naive enough to think that we were going to go on and win the Champions League, or that if we did, it would be easy, or that, you know, there was no chance of this happening. You need to learn from these things. And, you know, we kept saying that we needed to learn from the Premier League run in last season. Have we learned? Well, that remains to be seen. You know, we dropped some points against Villa, but if we go on and win our six games, I'd argue that we've done better than we did last year. I'd argue that we did suffer a minor setback, but we didn't allow it to turn from a setback into a rot and allow that rot to set in, if that makes sense. In the Champions League, it's a different kettle of fish. And the biggest indicator of how different the Premier League, the Champions League is to the Premier League, and what should demonstrate more than anything that it isn't as easy as just turning up in the Champions League and winning, is look how long it took Manchester City to win it. Manchester City, the formidable Manchester City, they're out of it this time as well at the quarterfinal stage. Arsenal, to be back in the competition after all these years and go out of the quarterfinal stage is disappointing. It's not a disgrace. What would people say when talking about Man City, who were everybody's favourites to win the competition? They've gone out in the quarterfinals. That's disappointment, isn't it? City probably go on and win the Premier League. And then nobody will talk about what they did in the Champions League. And that's fair enough. They've earned that right. And they're probably going to earn that right for that to not be talked about. But the point I'm trying to make is that you don't just return to the Champions League and go on and win it. It's a journey. It's a long journey. There's a lot of lessons that need to be learned along the way. And what we've seen from Arsenal so far under Mikel Arteta's tenure is consistent progress. Some would argue that the progress has not been rapid enough. Some would argue that with the money spent, there should have been more progress in this window of time. And look, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But as Tom Canton put out last night on X, I think this is I think this is a really, really good point. People can talk about the money we've spent. The side that you are looking at as the benchmark, Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, not only do they have the best manager in the world, not only have they had 10 years, more than that, during which some of their activities, by the way, have been questioned. It's alleged that they broke the rules. They've spent 1.2 billion to assemble this squad, which is more than double of what we've spent. So just think about that when you're sitting there saying there has been no progress, this team's a disgrace, this team's not good enough, blah, blah, blah. And as David says in the comments, football and progress in football isn't always linear. I say that all the time. I say that a lot on this show. Progress doesn't just go like that. It's not as simple as that. There will be bumps. There will be bits where you make small bits of progress. There will be times where you make lots of progress. There will be times where it feels like you're making none. But this is football, and we need to bounce back at the weekend. We absolutely have to. And the only way the team does that, and the only way the team can maybe find that bit of energy, is if there's some confidence injected in the group. And that has to come from within, obviously, within themselves. Are they winners? Has to come from the manager. It also has to come from us as fans. The post-mortem for this season, if there is a need for one, I can wait till the end of the campaign. We could talk about each game on an individual basis, on an individual level. But this desire to kind of turn on the manager, turn on some of the players, turn on the club at this stage in the season is just counterproductive. And it doesn't, to me, make that much sense. I am going to run because we are filming the 90-min show very, very shortly, which is why I'm in a different setting today. Please do come over and check that out when we go live. Don't forget to leave a like on this video, to subscribe to the channel as well if you're brand new. If you're listening on audio as well, please do leave us a review. It really, 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 really does help. Leave your thoughts, leave your questions in the comments section, not in the live chat, in the comments section after the video ends. And I will pick up a load of those on the next episode, because I feel like this is the kind of game and result that we're going to need a bit of time to process. I thought about doing this pod last night. I was this close. And I thought to myself, no, because I'm not going to give you any rational analysis. I'm not going to give you the kind of messages that I want to give you. I'm not going to assess it in the same way. I'm not going to come up with the same points. I'm probably going to be a lot more reactive and maybe a bit harsher on some of the individuals, on some of the managers' decisions. You can be critical without effing and jeffing. You can be critical without, you know, digging out individuals beyond where, you know, their responsibility lies. I think you got to find them. I think you got to find that balance. And I don't think it's possible straight after a game. Some people can do it. I can't. Anyway, guys, thank you all so, so much for coming along. Really, really do appreciate it. Remember, like, subscribe, leave a review if you're listening on audio. Thank you all so much for your constant support. And I will see you all on the next one. Until then, take care of yourselves. Have a great day.